Welcome to Curious and Candid, conversations with those in pursuit of more. Today's guest is Sarah Manderscheid. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, for sure. You're welcome, Sarah. So, looking forward to kind of getting into your story and all things running. But before we kind of get to that point, I've got a few questions I want to just ask you. I like to call them the conversational starter questions, just to kind of get the conversational ball rolling, so to speak. So, the first question I am curious about is, how do you start your day? Is there any specific routine or ritual you like to stick to on most days and most mornings?
Oh wow, that's such a great question because I run my own coaching business and I work from home. So structure is really important and it's something that I'm working on to get better with because if you work from home, it can be a lot of distracting things going on. So I love waking up in the morning having pouring a cup of coffee, but then also spending time with my dog. I have a black lab. She's turning 8 in a few months, and I take her out to go to the bathroom. I give her breakfast, and I might do like a few things around the house. I might journal a little bit. Definitely one thing that is tried and true is that I do the New York Times mini crossword puzzle before I start work. So typically I'll jump in and jump on the computer. Within 30 minutes of waking up, which is pretty wild.
Cool. Why do you do the crossword puzzle? And how long have you been doing that before you kind of jump into your work? Because that's a unique one.
It is unique. I picked it up from, gosh, like 4 years ago during the pandemic. And I think it's a great way to start the day because it can be something fun. It can be something that you like lean into and take as much time as you need to finish it. Or you could like challenge yourself for the morning and be like, let's see how fast I can get this done. It really does jumpstart the brain. I think it can be really cool, and a great way to just like kick off the day.
Okay, perfect. Love that. What's your like all-time favorite book? If there's more than one, I know that would be hard for me to answer. Feel free to share as many as you would like. And then if you listen to podcasts, do you have a favorite or go-to podcast? So
Oh,
favorite
cool.
book, favorite podcast.
Yeah, I'm not a big reader. I wish I was, but I'm just not. Or maybe I just don't take the time to read. But a book that really resonated with me, of course, it's a running book, but I read it during my first marathon prep when I ran CIM in 2019, and it's Let Your Mind Run by Dina Castor. It is the most inspiring motivational and like capturing book I could have read in that time. And I think it'd be a great one to probably reread. But Dina Castor is so freaking motivating and inspirational. And it was her journey through running in college and then running in Alamos, Colorado, for most of her elite career. And she was running with men, and how that kind of shaped her training. And she ended up being one of the most strongest elite female US marathoners in her time. And it's a really, really cool book. And fun fact, I got to meet her at the CIM Expo in 2023. So last December. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like full circle. The first time I ran this race, I read your book. The second time I ran this race, I get to meet her and meet you. And it was so cool.
Do you have any do you listen to podcasts, or is there one that you maybe check in on every once in a while, or not so much?
Yeah, I have so I have my own podcast, which when I first started it, maybe you can agree with me on this, like I would listen to it every single week to like check it, like double check everything sounds right and how I sounded. And now I don't do that anymore. I'm like, it is what it is.
What's the name of your podcast? Just touch on that for a minute, because I didn't know that you had your own podcast. So talk about that, and then if you have your favorite outside of your
Oh,
own,
cool.
you go ahead and share that, because I'd love to hear how you got into podcasting too.
Oh yeah, for sure. So it's the Elevate Your Running podcast. Elevate Your Running is my coaching business, and it's a weekly podcast that drops every Thursday morning, and it's a podcast to lift runners high. And it's a podcast that I love to teach different points in running, whether that's pace or effort or mindset, nutrition. My latest episode was all about like anything and everything you can expect for Boston Marathon weekend with tips if you're on the cusp of Boston qualifying, right? So it kind of has this nice balance of like, it really does draw, I think, to a lot of the masses for runners. It's not a super beginner friendly podcast, but it is if you've been at least maybe running through one training cycle, or know a little bit of like workouts and lingo. I think it's a really fun podcast. And I started it a few years ago with someone else who lived in Colorado where I live. And over the last few months, it transitioned to a solo host, and I'm hosting it, which is a lot of fun. And I just want to bring like the energy, the joy, and the love that I have for running through that podcast to help others maybe run their best training cycle, run their best race, or really dial in that nutrition issue that they could be having.
Cool. Okay. Now, do you ever bring on guests, or is it more like you kind of said now, it's just a solo podcast and you're kind of more taking that coaching approach and sharing with your audience kind of some of your knowledge and experiences? What does that kind of look like in terms of the structure of your podcast, Sarah?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can be a talker, so the episodes can be like 60 to 75 minutes long. I'm looking to incorporate like one guest per month. I think that's a really nice balance. As you know, having your own podcast, and when you bring a guest on, there is quite a bit of like extra research that goes into like the guest and the questions and like all the things that you're asking. So I think it's a really nice balance. And I'm just getting my feet wet per se with like the interviewing. And my co-host who I had for it was about 2 years. He was super great because he would just lead those sessions. So now I'm getting a little bit outside of my comfort zone, but it's a really good place to be and it's a really good place to grow. So I'm really, really fortunate that the audience has hung on and stayed with me. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. I love that. And then just to kind of wrap up this question, is there a podcast that you kind of enjoy listening to, or a couple? Can you kind of give us that if you do listen to podcasts?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I love, there's like three that I listen to basically every week. It's like Jay Shetty's podcast. So great. Mel Robbins podcast. So you see where this is going. The School of Greatness with Lewis Howes. That's great. That can be good. And sometimes I'll listen to like the Daily or the Wall Street Journal, like daily podcast for like my news source, which is nice too. But I try and listen, I guess, maybe to some running podcasts when the title or the topic really pulls me in. But because I am very heavy in my own personal training and I am a coach, I run my own coaching business, I have to draw the line somewhere with like all things running.
Yes, I would agree. Sometimes you got to step out of your world a little bit, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. In the last year, Sarah, what's a life lesson that you've been taught or that you've learned?
Ooh, that is a good one because I'm definitely going through a learning growth season in life. And I think, gosh, over the last year, something that I really need to do, and I think it's a really good lesson for anyone listening, because we're 4 years since the pandemic started, maybe 2.5 years since life kind of got back to what we call somewhat normal. And I think the power of slowing down and the power of being present is really something that we've as a society, and I myself, has lost over the last 2.5 years. And that, like, true connection with people. Like, I really miss the times where I could meet up with people for a group run and it was easy. And people were like, I'll be there. Great. And now it's like everyone has something else going on. And it's kind of sad in that sense. And that life is short. And to really just like lean into everything that you want to do and make it fun. And it's going to be a good life.
So for you personally, Sarah, how do you kind of slow down? How do you practice presence? Obviously, I'm sure you have some sort of running community with your coaching business, also maybe with some friends and things like that in the Boulder area that you're able to connect in person. But practically speaking, how have you been able to slow down, practice presence, and incorporate some of these things into your day to day?
Yeah, that's a great question. One huge thing that I've been doing is anytime I notice that my mind's starting to wander, I'm starting to think about maybe what's next or all the things on my get-to list, or I have a tendency of always thinking about maybe something an athlete that I coach is going through, and it's exhausting because my mind's on 24/7. So what I'm trying to do, and I'm working with someone on this, is the power of presence. And anytime I notice my mind starting to drift into somewhere else, whether it's, you know, a good thing or a not so good thing, taking a moment, taking in some deep breaths, and noticing 5 things that I see. And then noticing 4 things that I can touch and 3 things that I can hear, 2 things that I can, I usually don't get to 2. I know one is, let's see. So I know. Let's see if I have this. I think I have it written down. Hang on. I'm so good. I would actually recommend if anyone's having problems with this to do it, because once I get to the first step, which is see, so you see 5 things, I'm usually like back in and like present. 4 things you can touch, 3 things you can hear, 2 things that you can smell, and then 1 thing that you can taste. And it's a grounding exercise to really ground the person, to help them stay, be in the moment and not get too ahead of themselves with whatever's coming up.
Cool. Love that. Thanks for sharing a little bit of that practicality. I think that's always important to be able to have some of those practices implemented. So, okay, we're going to wrap up the conversational starter questions here, Sarah, with, do you have a favorite quote, mantra, or word?
Oh, wow. So my mantras and words and all that jazz change with every season that I'm in. And a lot of times that season revolves around my training season for running. But this season is yes, I can. And the one that has really resonated the most with me and that I felt like really not only helped me, but it helped a lot of people that I shared it with was, it was from my last season of running. And the mantra was, I'm proving myself right. So anytime I would run a workout, every rep, every mile, every interval chunk, whatever that was, because every workout's a little bit different, I would, before getting into it, tell myself that I could do it. And then once the watch would beep, I'd look down and I'd tell myself, you're doing it. You're proving yourself right. And I would literally say it out loud. Like, this is in Boulder on, like, you know, training runs. And I'm like, you're proving yourself right, Sarah. And people are like, what the heck? But it works. And it not only works when you tell yourself that, but when you're, let's say you're in a long run, and every single mile I would do that. And I practice 20, 22, tw- I did get a 25 mile long run in my last training prep, which is not the norm. So anyone who is a runner listening to this, that's not the norm. And every single mile, I would tell myself that. And when you are just pounding that in your head every single week, maybe it's twice a week for a 12, or maybe you have a 16 week training cycle, it sticks with you. Like, there's no way that you're showing up to race day and like not doing it.
Right. Love that. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to kind of dig into your backstory, Sarah. So I just want you, if you don't mind, kind of sharing with all of us a little bit about your childhood. What was that like? Where did you physically grow up? Siblings? Did you play sports? Were you involved in other extracurriculars? Just kind of paint that picture for us up to, you know, and through high school, and then kind of stop there, because we'll kind of transition to post high school once we kind of learn a little bit more about you in terms of your childhood.
Wow. Okay. This is gonna be fun. Another, just before we begin, another mantra that's like, I think more like humanly and not maybe running based, is that life is now. And that's something that I really stuck with and really used in a transition in my life that we'll probably end up talking about here. But the life is now is really powerful. And it kind of goes back to that, like being present and really being like focused in on what you're doing. But my childhood, oh my gosh. Okay. So I was born in Iowa. And I think for anyone listening to this that knows me personally, they're going to be pretty shocked by this. So I grew up in Eastern Iowa. I was born in Eastern Iowa. I grew up there. My family and I have two sisters, mom and a dad. We moved to Western Michigan when I was 10 years old. I was in fifth grade. And I went to Catholic school all the way through 10 years old. And then when we moved to Michigan, I got to go to public school. And my childhood, from what I remember, is I loved being outside. I loved playing outside. I loved listening to music. I loved riding my bike around and like cruising around to music and like eating food and just like being this, like, I don't know, it's just like very happy and just like in my own space, and loved it. I didn't play sports growing up. I was in like Girl Scouts, and I would do more like crafty, like sort of activities. I did go to the library a lot. So I did read when I was younger, which is kind of interesting that I'm not a reader now. But my younger sister, who I'm really close with, she and I would go to the library all the time to read and like pick up books and all that stuff. And she's like still very avid reader. So that's kind of interesting. But grew up or spent my, gosh, I spent middle school, high school, college, and a few years after college in Michigan. And I grew up in a beach town right on Lake Michigan. And I think at the time, I didn't realize how cool of a situation that was. Our winters were pretty intense, but the summers are really nice. And if anyone's been to Michigan or has vacationed on like Lake Michigan or any of the Great Lakes, they actually are like oceans. It's not salt water, but it does feel like you're on the coast of California or something like that. So that was really cool. And my family and I would vacation, like kind of vacation, but like every summer we'd go to Chicago. So Chicago is such a, it has such a, it holds such a strong place in my heart. It's almost like my second home. And I love the city of Chicago. I love the Chicago Marathon, and I got to run it 2 years ago, and it was just like the best. And I grew up a Cubs fan, so I did watch sports and grew up a Bulls fan. Now I'm a little bit older, so Michael Jordan was my, he was like in his prime when I was maybe like 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, like that age. So really good, like memories on that side of things. And I was more of a wallflower. I had a small group of friends. I loved to plan our weekends. I loved to do all the things that like teenage girls in the 90s did, which was go to the mall, go to basketball games, and I probably had my first cup of coffee during that time too.
Okay. Just so you know, because we don't know each other personally, I'm actually from Iowa.
Oh, cool.
I'm from Northwest Iowa. So we're at in the eastern side of the state. Did you grow up, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, Dubuque.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
How cool is that? Small
Dubuque
world.
I'm from a small town in Iowa, like less than 5,000 people. Dubuque's, how big is Dubuque? It's probably grown over the years, but...
It's definitely bigger, but I grew up for, like, I was born there, and then we moved to Maquoketa, which is a very, very small town. Yeah. And I lived there for 4 years, and then we moved to Michigan. So try me. What town did you grow up in? I might know it.
I grew up in Cherokee, which is an hour from Sioux City.
Oh, okay. Cool. Great.
So good old Iowa.
Yeah. Good old Iowa.
Okay.
Go Hawkeyes.
So some 90s questions then, because that's kind of the generation I grew up in as well, in early 2000s. But what was your go-to music? Like what boy band did you listen
Oh,
to?
yeah.
And also, after you answer that, if you don't mind, what was school like for you? Did you enjoy school? Did you hate school? Did you just go because you wanted to hang out with your friends? What was that like after you answer the music question?
Yeah. Okay. So my very first cassette tape when I was 6 years old was the Beach Boys. So I think we know where this is going. That they were like the original boy band, right? So my boy band, I was Team Backstreet Boys, had the poster. They came to Detroit when I was maybe, I wasn't old enough to drive because my best friend and I at the time, we had like her mom drive us to the concert. And I think we ended up staying the night. And I don't know if I had school the next morning or if it was like on a weekend. I'm not really sure how my parents would have assessed that. I don't know. I mean, I grew up Catholic, so it's like pretty strict household, but also some things aren't strict. So, So it's definitely Team Backstreet Boys. Loved them. My younger sister, Angie, super close with her. She was Team NSYNC. So that was fun. And gosh, and what was the other question in high school?
Like, did you enjoy school? Were you good in school? Did you get good grades? What was that kind of like for you when you're younger?
Yeah. I was definitely that type of person that I love rules. So school for me was like probably very comforting in some ways of like, this is my schedule every day. I'm taking notes every day. I really am an achiever. So I wanted to do well, but it took a lot of effort to do well. So I had to study twice as long as like anyone else needed to probably study to like do well. I liked the social aspect from like my small friend group, but I think school, I know school all the way up through maybe like, maybe I found my groove in college, but I was definitely like, didn't love school for like some of the social stuff. Like I felt like because I didn't belong in like the bigger popular group, it made it a little bit more difficult. And people, when I moved from Iowa to Michigan, you know, I was so naive. I still am, but like people like made fun of like how I dressed and what I wore. And I think that always stuck with me. And I didn't love school for that reason, kind of that like bullying, not fitting in sort of thing. But college was a little bit better.
Okay. So was there anything, I mean, you just kind of mentioned kind of getting made fun of things like that, which I think a lot of us, you know, that's just part of growing up. But was there anything like traumatic or anything that you feel like negatively speaking really had a profound impact on your life when you were younger, but also is maybe something that you're still working through or have had to work through from that childhood, you know, that you experienced, or was it pretty much smooth sailing all through?
I think with, gosh, my childhood in general, like we all have stuff that we have to unpack from our childhood, right? I think when it comes to like my family, being the best or doing my best was always like the driver for everything that I needed to do. And so that's obvious. If anyone's listening that knows me, they're like, oh, ha ha, this is how she is now. I'm such a driver now, and I want to do all the things, and I want to have a really successful coaching business, and I want to be able to do all the things, but I'm realizing that it's not possible to do that all the time. And kind of learning some lessons around that and how it's okay to like give myself grace when things get a little bit hard, or if I'm not feeling super motivated, versus like, but P I need people to like me, so I need to do XYZ.
Okay, last question, and then we'll kind of transition to post high school. Mom and dad, what was your relationship like with them? And do you feel like they instilled anything in you that you really still hold on to this day in terms of a positive regard or light?
Yeah, growing up, I was that kid that was like, Mom and Dad, you're so unfair. I don't get anything. Like, you don't give me anything. My friends get a car, like all this stuff. Like, my friends get allowances. So I needed to work in order to earn money to like go shopping or like go to the movies with my friends or things like that. And so at the time, it was like such a buzzkill. I was like, ah, but I also loved working. And every summer, I would have like multiple jobs and I just loved it. I loved being busy. I loved having a lot of things going on. And I, you know, as a teenager, you still have the energy to like hang out with your friends and all that kind of stuff. It's a little bit different now. But I think the two biggest lessons that my parents like role modeled for me, and that's something that I still have, and it's something that I'm super grateful for both of them, is that they are both very kind people. And my dad definitely has a little bit more of a shorter fuse, which I think I get if anyone has seen that. But they're both very kind, and they are both very hard workers. And I have both of those qualities for sure. I think both of my sisters do too. And it's something that was just so driven and so like, it was just something that was a part of our lives, like our entire childhood. And I think those are two really big things that when you are a kid growing up, you don't realize how important that is when you become an adult and how great that is. Because my friends who got the cars and got the allowances and got, you know, everything that they asked for, you know, I'm not saying they're not doing great, but they're definitely struggling through adulthood a little bit more, if that makes sense. So, I think kindness is king, right? If we all had a little bit more kindness, every single human on this planet, imagine what kind of world we could live in versus the world that we have. And, you know, hardworking can't beat it.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that. That's great. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about college, post high school. So what did you want to do when you were in high school, after you graduated, in terms of quote unquote, when you grew up, what did you want to do or be? Then you go to college, and usually for most of us, college is an experience, to say the least. And there's some of us that change our minds, one or two times, 1,000 times once we're in college, and some of us into adulthood still don't know what we want to be when we grow up. However, some of us do know from the get-go and kind of follow through. So for you, what was it like in terms of thoughts that you wanted to do post high school? How did that unfold once you got into college? Just kind of walk us through those years post high school, if you don't mind, Sarah, please.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know what I wasn't like super excited to go to college, but I was excited to go to college. Like I wasn't excited to like choose a school, if that makes sense. I don't know. That's kind of weird, but I wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to apply to this school and this school and this school. So I ended up going to a school like 20, 30 minutes away from where I grew up. It's called Grand Valley State University in Michigan. It is the third largest college in Michigan, right behind Michigan and Michigan State. So I would like to say that. It's a liberal arts school, and I actually started with an education degree. Like I wanted to become a teacher. I wanted to become a kindergarten teacher because I think I was like 13 years old, I started babysitting, and I actually had like my own little babysitting business. And I love the Babysitters Club. So if anyone's listening from the 90s, you know what I'm talking about. And I had my own like little babysitter business, and I had like different households on different nights, and it was all very like recurring. And then, you know, I'd fit in like these one-offs, and the neighbors would talk about like, well, I really need babysitter Sarah for this night. And okay, well, I'll swap you for this night. It was great. So I thought, oh, I really love kids. I think, you know, elementary school, like that would just be my jam. And after about a year of going through the program, so I was still like a freshman, right? I was taking like core classes and then a few like educational classes. I had to get up in front of the room and like talk to them like they were kindergartners. So like kind of go through the process. And I was like, oh, I don't know. This feels like it could be kind of hard if I had to do this every day. Like, you know, based on how you show up every single day. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could do that. So I pivoted into the business department, and I got a marketing degree. And my dad really wanted me to also have something with a bit more structure to it, because he's like, you know, anytime the economy's bad, the first people to get fired or laid off is the marketing department. So I got a finance degree, and it was 4.5 years of school. I really excelled in both. I love the creative side of marketing, but my brain works really well on like the analytical finance side, but it's not something I love. And so it worked really well. And I ended up out of college getting my first job out of college was a marketing job at a financial services company. So there we go, blending the two majors together. And I didn't know what I really wanted to do, but I knew I needed a job. And this was a job. And I thought, okay, great. And at the time, I was still living in Michigan. And I think at that point, I really loved school, or maybe I was afraid of becoming an adult because I took 4.5 years to graduate with a dual degree. I had a sales emphasis, so I had an emphasis on top of it. And all of my friends graduated in 4 years. And I was like, this kind of starts to seem like, I don't know if I want to be out there in the real world. Like, this is really nice. Like, it's easy, right? And I think I'm a very intuitive person, and I haven't thought about this in a very long time, but maybe I knew what I was getting myself into.
Yeah. And I think also, because you've mentioned it several times, Sarah, as we've been chatting here about, you know, like how you appreciate structure and kind of like all of that. And I found for myself, and I think there's a lot of people that go through this once they're done with college, because if you go to the typical private or public school, like you did and I did, and a lot of people do, basically our entire lives from day one up until we graduate, whether that's high school or college, we basically have some sort of structure set out for us in terms of school and what we're supposed to do to get the grades and do all the things and accomplish all the things. And like for myself, I was an athlete, so I had the school structure, I had the athletic structure. But then once you're done with college, you really have the question of like, what's next? What now? Now, some people, you know, they might have a job right out of college, so they just kind of get ushered into that. But a lot of us don't know what's next, and we're kind of left wandering, searching, wondering, like kind of at a loss. And that's where I found myself kind of at certain points in college and after college, because it's just like, man, like that structure of sports and school is done and over with. Now what? And I don't think that's talked enough about. So I kind of understand maybe some of those thoughts that you were having in terms of when you were in college, and maybe like, maybe I don't want to, maybe I'll just kind of continue on because I really don't know. Is that kind of resonating or fair to say?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think it's anytime there's like an unknown, right? Like that is scary because you don't know what's on the other side of it. And I think whether it's in college, it's right after college, or it's 10 years after college, like me, there is a point where you like take a step back and you're like, hold on, everything that I've been working for is not making me happy. It's not how I want to spend the rest of my life. I think it's really challenging to ask a 17, 18-year-old to decide what they want to do for the rest of their lives. Like, really, now that I'm on like the other side of 40, I'm like 17, 18, babies, right? We're babies. We don't know what we're doing. I think if anything, if you have the capability, take a year or two, travel, go see, explore, do, and then jump into a program. And you might have a better sense of self. You definitely will have a better sense of self and a better sense of maybe what is fueling that fire and that passion and creating something around that versus this maybe box that we get put in by society or our family. I know I do thrive on structure, and I think almost too much where I just checked the box through my life until I was about 34. Check, 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 check. And then I was like, I need to burn this list.
Okay. Yeah. Now I want you, if you don't mind, to walk us through kind of like the corporate years. So you're just kind of talking about up till about 34. It sounds like you were just kind of doing what you were quote unquote supposed to do, making money, paying bills, adulting. So just walk us through kind of those years and touch on some of those thoughts and feelings that you were having in those years. Cause it sounds like maybe there was some emptiness, or at some point you kind of realized like, hey, like, you know, what is my life? This isn't making me happy. This isn't for me. Like, what's going on here? So, because there's always, you know, breaking points or transition points or light bulb moments in our lives, maybe one, maybe two, maybe, you know, 20. But I just kind of want you to walk us through some of those corporate years, business years, and again, share some of those thoughts and feelings that you were having and move us into maybe some of that transition of like, this is not what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. And just kind of continue to unpack your adult story, I guess, at this point.
Yeah. So I stayed in Michigan for 4 years with the same company, just doing the same thing. And that's when I started running. I started running as pretty shortly after college as a way to kind of reduce stress, because I found the 8 to 5 stressful. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to sit in front of a desk. Like this is, I have to like, I like the dressing up part, and like, I love clothes and I love like that whole aspect of things. So like that was fun for me. The social part was fun, but I didn't love just how much time it took out of the day, like sitting in front of the computer and just how stressful it could be. So I did that for 4 years in Michigan, and then I moved to Colorado, and I ended up finding a job with the same type of office, but it was like an elevated office. It was an office that was working with high net worth families. Everyone, like, it just seemed like it was a small business office. Like there were 10, 12 people, and it just felt very warm and very comforting. And I think anytime we say that in hindsight, there should be sirens going off. Like, well, why does this feel so comforting? And I spent 10 years at that same job. And over the course of the 10 years there, I grew a lot as a human. It was a lot of fun until it wasn't. And I say a lot of fun. I think a lot of the when you're in a corporate setting like that, the team makes such a big difference and the people that you work with make a big difference. So maybe you don't necessarily totally love what you're doing, but you're getting paid really well and the team is fun. So like you can deal with some of the BS, right? And it got to a point where, and I know this to be true in my life now, anytime I'm complaining or I'm in a like sour mood, it's because something isn't being fulfilled. If there's a need that isn't being fulfilled. And it got to a point where my personal life was kind of falling apart. So I was married and then I got divorced. And I really needed, I think, time to take a step back from work, and I should have. But the message that was sent to me and really like said to me in person was, I need you to work harder. And I just need you to like forget that this personal thing is happening and just focus in on work and work as much as you can. And as someone who is a hard worker and someone who really loves to check the box, I tried to do that and things just started to get worse, right? It's like you just feel worse and everything's just harder. So that was in 2017 and it took about 2 years. I knew I needed something different very shortly, even maybe before that, before 2017. I just knew that what I was doing wasn't fueling my soul. And it just felt like I was always being asked to just do a little bit more and do a little bit more. And I'm like, I can't give any more. This is like as much as I can give. And the team dynamic changed and it just felt like I was getting backed into a wall, and that doesn't feel good either. So I was at a yoga retreat in 2019 and, you know, we worked with high net worth families and I did the marketing, events, website, social media, all that stuff. And, you know, we're not curing cancer here. I'm making rich people richer, right? Or helping. I'm part of that team. So like there gets to be a little bit grace, but this team was just very, 24, we needed to be on 24/7. It was a very intense environment. And the person that led this team in some ways reminded me of how my dad is. My dad can be intense. He asks for a lot, but he's also very kind, same as this employer. And so I was at this yoga retreat. I needed 36 hours away. At this point, I'm exhausted. I'm just exhausted. I'm like, I need to go away. I'm in the mountains of Colorado. I'm in like, I'm outside of Steamboat. It starts with a K. I can't remember the exact name. Maybe it'll come to me. But it was so much fun until it wasn't, because they didn't honor what I asked and they reached out and they needed me to change something that was being, it was like a, we were doing a video shoot on Monday and the managing partner decided to just like leave town. And so I needed to like cancel everything. This was on a Saturday afternoon. It's like we had everything set up with vendors. So, you know, my stress levels are high. I think I still sound stressed talking about it. Like, yeah, Jesus.
Your energy has shifted a tad bit.
Yeah. So that Monday morning, or maybe it's the following Monday morning, we had a team meeting and everyone on the team's there and the managing partner is just like letting me have it in front of everyone about like that last week and the way it was handled and just, I mean, he just finding anything that he could pick apart. And he like quickly shifted the conversation and we moved on to like the rest of the agenda. And I was like, whew, got through that. Well, he ended up calling me back and I took the call and he was just like laying into me, like very, like this was 2019, mm-hmm. Like not okay in 2019, definitely not okay in 2023, but you know, and he's like, what do you have to say for yourself? And that was the moment I felt like this white light was like over my head. And I was like, Sarah, this is your moment to quit. Like, this is it. And I said, I quit. I'm done. I can't do this. You don't appreciate me. You don't value me. I can't do anything right. And he was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's back up. Do you want to do something different? Is there something else you want to do? Like, no, like he was, you know, pushing back. And I guess he realized that he pushed me too far. And that was one of the moments in my life. Another moment was moving to Colorado, but that was a moment in my life when everything changed. And I stayed on the team for 2 months, 2 months after that to like wrap up projects. It really was a family, but it was a very dysfunctional family. And I took the summer of 2019 off because I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I knew that what I was doing wasn't making me happy. And it was really intense. And I thought there has to be more to life than this. Like, yeah. This just seems like a very hollow, shallow way to live. And so I spent that summer traveling, exploring, running, spending time with my dog, trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And it ended up being that I went to a running camp in North Carolina the following, like the first month I was off. I think it was in June. And the camp counselors, who are also running coaches, said to me, like, everyone knew my story, right? It's like, you're at camp for adults who run. So everyone knew my story. And the camp counselors were like, you should, like, you have an events background, you have a marketing background, you like running. Why don't you host these camps in Boulder? That could be cool. And I'm like, that could be cool. That sounds like something that makes me happy. That sounds like fun. I think I should do that. So in the meantime, I did accept a consulting contract with a large insurance company to do email marketing for them for a 6-month contract. And I think anytime you're going into the first day of a new job or even a contract or whatever, I was like crying and I'm like, this isn't a good sign. I don't think I should be doing this, but you know, it's only 6 months is what I kept telling myself. But that 6 months was a long 6 months. And then that was February, that contract ended the end of February, 2020. Ooh. And I had running camps in place for the summer of 2020. Ooh. And then the pandemic hit mid-March. And as we all know, the summer of 2020 was maybe the loneliest summer of everyone's lives. Maybe the most fulfilling in other ways, if you had people to live with and you had that connection with great people. But it was a time of shifting and pivoting and figuring out what I wanted to do next because the camps weren't happening.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. I know we kind of have some limited time today, so I do want to kind of get more in depth in the running stuff, but we're kind of rolling with your story personally. So I just kind of want to touch on a couple more things and we'll do pull back some more layers with the running stuff. Now, talk to us about maybe the spiritual side of Sarah. So you had a Catholic upbringing, which I'm not Catholic myself, mm-hmm. but you know, when you're in the Midwest, from the Midwest, there is a very heavy Catholic influence. So I'm very familiar with, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of, I'll just call it religion. What does the spiritual side of things for you kind of look like now at this juncture in your life? Have you kind of, you know, shifted from the Catholic mm-hmm. upbringing into a different direction? If so, what does that look like? If you don't mind touching on that, and how has that impacted you kind of in this new season of life post corporate world?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I went to church like 3 times a week as a child in my, you know, Catholic uniform. That is a thing. That is a real thing. And it wasn't a positive experience for me. I think a lot of people could probably relate to that. And it felt like another thing that just added pressure and this thing of like, you're not good enough. And like, So as soon as I could, I shifted away from it. And so that meant like when I moved out of my parents' house, I no longer went to Catholic service. And I am, and it has shifted into more of a spiritual acceptance and spiritual like practice where I'm a big believer in like the universe and karma and being a good person, communicating what you need, learning all the lessons in life along the way. And coming from that place and like a place of like kindness and a place of like, let's be the best version of ourselves and help each other to be that and see what comes from that. Because, you know, you can go to church once a week and be a total outside of it, right? So, like, let's be, I don't know. I think it's like, let's just be us every single day. And I really do lean into that, like, kindness and, just helping each other.
Yeah. Be a good human. I think that's a brand in Denver area, right?
Yeah. Be a good human. Karma, 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 karma.
All right.
It's real. And I'm a big believer that it's not just real for the people that maybe deserve a little dose of karma, but I think it's also very true for people who do the right thing and show up and they are kind and they're putting their best foot forward. There's no agenda, there's no manipulation, that sort of thing. Like they will also get good karma. They'll get what they deserve too.
I think that in our world that we're currently living in, Sarah, I think it's becoming harder and harder to be what you're talking about or sharing with us in terms of just like
It
real,
is.
being present, slowing down, being kind, listening to other people, because we live in a this social media driven world now where everybody has a voice, which is fine, but sometimes, certain voices are louder than other voices, and that can just create chaos and confusion and craziness. And
Yeah.
the wrong voices, when we listen to those wrong voices, can really lead to a lot of hate and destruction and things of that nature. So I think it's beautiful to be a human that can realize that kindness, like you said earlier, is king. And there's nothing wrong with just being genuinely who you are, loving
Yeah.
others, being kind to others, you know? So it's hard, but it's definitely attainable. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it is attainable. I think like just doing one small thing each day, if that's holding the door open for someone, 'cause like no one does that anymore, or smiling at someone, or which, you know, that could be interpreted as something else too, right? Like there's, it's just such a different world. But if you could do something to make someone else smile or feel good or feel seen or feel heard, which is a lot of what like the basis of my coaching is about, I think that can go a long way because that energy spreads. And you know, it could be a very small spread. It could be a big spread, but it does spread. And I think that that's a really cool thing.
Very well put. Okay. Let's kind of get back into you launching your pursuit of being a running coach and having these camps. So you had the camp set up for 2020. We all know what happened in 2020. So just from that point, walk us through how you kind of got everything launched and how you kind of have taken the running coaching into I'm assuming like a full-time pursuit and business for yourself.
So once I came to accept that the running camps needed to be canceled, because like things were already planned, I ended up getting certified to be a running coach. And I was the very first group of people who participated. I think it's the RRCA or RRCA, Roadrunners Coaching Association, something like that. I was the very first group to go through like their Zoom certification. And that was, I think, in May of 2020. And And I didn't know what to do because races were canceled, but I thought this is at least something I can do right now, right? And so I built my website. I started a run club in Denver. I was living in Boulder, still live in Boulder. It's about, depending, during the pandemic, it was like a 35-minute commute. Now it's like well over an hour. Some weeks it's like a 90-minute commute. It's wild. But I started a run club to bring people together. We stayed 6 feet apart. We had masks. It was awesome. It was probably like the coolest time when I think back because people showed up and we were all excited to see each other. And like everyone was just, it's just like there was so much good at that time, even though it was a very scary time. And so I was working really hard to meet people. I hustled, I was on Strava, I was hosting these run clubs, I was on social media, and I was just trying to do everything that I could do to start coaching people because that kind of seemed like the next appropriate step because we knew that races were going to come back at some point. And there were a few states that didn't actually shut down, right? Like Florida, Utah, Texas, I think still had
Iowa.
Some races. Iowa. Yeah, there's a few in there. And it grew well. The fall of 2021, which is when races came back, my coaching business kind of went to a whole new tier, a whole new level. And the podcast was formed pretty quickly after that. I coach virtually all over the country. I coach a bigger group, or there's a big group in Denver, and we do Wednesday workouts in person now. So that run club has kind of shifted into track workouts. And what else is there? I feel like I do all the things. I mean, I am the CMO, the COO, the CEO, the C. I'm all the C's. I do it all. It's a lot. It's way more work than I thought it was going to be running your own business, for sure. It could be stressful.
Yeah. I still, like I said, I live in Colorado, but I still own a gym back in Iowa and run it remotely. So that's what I did kind of during the pandemic and for three and a half years before getting back into public education. So I definitely get that. Did you consult with anybody, hire anybody, have any mentors to kind of help you launch the coaching business, or was it kind of you just doing your thing and figuring it out on your own?
Yeah. I mean, my first coach that I used, so I ran my first marathon in 2019 at CIM, like I mentioned earlier in the episode, and I hired a running coach to help me because I wanted to Boston qualify in that first race. And I'd gotten my half marathon time down where I knew it was a possibility. So I felt like she's my current coach, but there was a coach in between. Her name's Nell Rojas. She's also an elite runner. She's great. And I just felt really inspired by her and everything that she had created and just how cool that was that she was able to give back in that way of like helping someone go through a training cycle, crush a race, reach a dream, and be better for it, not just as a runner, but as a human. So I would say she was a huge inspiration. And then I had another coach for about 2 years, from late summer 2020 until early summer of 22. And I did kind of follow his lead a bit on what he was doing and how he was structuring his business. But I really beat to this. I thrive by sometimes doing what I want to do. Like my parents would call me stubborn, but I think it does work out well because I grew my coaching business to a point over 3 years where I need to hire a business coach because I don't know where to take it. I don't know how to grow it. I'm very much maxed out on time and I need to be able to produce. I know this sounds terrible because I love like elevating people and working with people and having them feel so connected and like so strong, but I also want to be okay for retirement. And I also want to have more money. Like I do, that's like a human nature. So like, if I can grow what I've grown in 3 years with really no help, but just kind of following some people's lead, but leading to like my intuition, I think it could be really cool to see how it can grow in another 3 years if I hire someone to kind of help me mold the business to some dreams that I have.
Yeah, and out there in the area that you're in, there's a lot of, because I've had them on, I've been podcasting for almost 6 years and have a lot of connections out here in Colorado. There's all kinds of business coaches and gurus in Colorado, not in your area. So
yeah,
I'm sure you'll find
a
some
lot of running coaches too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, running's yeah, it's
the saturated market for sure.
Definitely big time out here. Okay. We're going to start heading towards the finish line, Sarah. So I just want to ask you, you've already, you know, done some marathons and done some cool things within running. What is your next personal goal in terms of your running?
Yeah, my overarching goal, really, I think since my very first marathon where I did BQ, I ran a 3:25 at CIM. I was able to run in the Boston Marathon fall 2021, which was the fall Boston, which was really cool. And I've since run 6 marathons, but the overarching goal of after running that first one, and when I decided I wanted to run a second, because we all know how that goes, it takes a while, is that I want to run a sub-3 marathon. And over the course of 6 marathons, I've only taken 10 minutes off my time. My PR is in Chicago at 2022. I've had some tough luck on race day, no doubt. Warm conditions mostly, and that's a really tough place for me to be. So I have something in mind for the fall of 2024. It's fast, it's flat, and depending on when this episode airs, I am running the Cherry Blossom 10 miler on April 7th. And I'm hoping for a really strong day there to kind of see how does that measure up with that sub-3 marathon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then I want to ask you just to kind of leave a nugget for the listeners out there. When you have athletes like reach out to you to have you coach them, right? What are some of like the major pitfalls that you see with individuals that are serious about running in terms of, you know, pitfalls with their training, with their nutrition, their recovery? Like what are like one or two of the major pitfalls that you see that you kind of have to address more often than not with some of those clients?
Yeah, with every single athlete, I shouldn't say every single athlete, every single runner, most runners run their easy days too fast. And when you're marathon training or you're running high mileage, that's a recipe for burnout or injury. Like it's just way too much load. So really practicing and helping athletes and runners understand the importance of jogging on some of those days and what a jog feels like versus what they think it feels like. And it's a great aspect to a lot of the in-person people that I see, because they'll say they're jogging or running easy. And I'm like, I'm running next to them and I'm just shaking my head like, no. Or I try and use like how slow I run on my easy days. Like I really do try and lead by example. So that's a huge one. And then I talk to every single athlete runner, and this is in their long run notes, like how to gel, how to hydrate, how often. And then once they have that dialed in, then we start talking about like, well, what are you eating before your long run or your workouts? And what are you doing after? Because that window of time is really important in making sure that you're not only eating enough before you go out for your run, long run, let's say you have a long run workout, and you're making sure that you eat enough gels, right? But also that you're also recovering and refueling within a certain time frame after that run, because that's going to start the recovery process and you're going to feel so much better if you eat and refuel the right way right after a run versus like waiting hours down the road.
Excellent. I think we'll have to have you come back on, Sarah, at some point in the future, just to talk shop about running. We definitely covered your personal story, but I'd love to have you come back on if you wouldn't mind sometime in the future, just to maybe dig into the nuts and bolts of running and nutrition.
Oh, I'd love that.
And all
yeah.
that. Sarah, before I do a quick outro and we wrap it up for today, I want to kind of just give you the opportunity if you have any thoughts or anything that you want to leave with us. I'm going to kind of just give you that opportunity, and then why don't you share with us website, social media, the name of your podcast again, where people can kind of find you, connect with you, follow along, reach out to you, all the things. So platform's yours. Once you're done, I'll do a quick outro, and then we'll get out of here for today.
Cool. Great. Yeah, I think I'd love to leave everyone with that mantra that I circled back to, which is life is now. So if do what you can do to set yourself up for success, to live the life that you want to live, and it's not going to be like an overnight thing, right? Like some situations are. If you quit your job, that can be a pretty big shift, right? But taking small steps forward every single day, I think is something that isn't as well received as it should be, because all those small steps forward are going to add up, just like they do in training, just like they do in running, and just like they do in life. And if you can take those small steps forward, you're going to create a lot of momentum and change will happen from that. Like life is going to move and pass us by anyways, right? So we might as well take that step, small or big, each day to reaching our goals and what we want to do, because it's pretty cool once you do and it feels really good. And then you get humbled again, but you have that moment for a while. And gosh, for coaching, my coaching business is called Elevate Your Running, because I'm a big believer in elevating the athletes, both, body, mind, soul, all those things. I really strive to be there for all the athletes and the running community. It's also something I'm working on with boundaries. And my website is elevateyourrunning.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Elevate Your Running. My podcast is called Elevate Your Running. And my personal Instagram is Sarah, SayyRah Runs Happy. And I'd love for you to follow along, share all the good things. Yeah.
Perfect. I love that you've got all the business things streamlined, just like they tell you that we're supposed to do, right, Sarah?
Yeah. Yeah, my email address is sarah@elevateyourrunning.com.
There you go. Yeah, I love it. Good marketing. You learned something in all those corporate years, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. A thing or
Yeah.
two for sure.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much, Sarah. I'm going to do a quick outro and then I'll get you out of here. But thank you so much for coming on today, okay?
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. I appreciate you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. All of you who are tuning in to another episode of Curious and Candid, I just want to say thank you so very much. I appreciate all of you. I value all of you. And I would love to connect with you guys. If you would like to connect with me, there's a couple places that we can connect. The first place is Instagram, Curious and Candid Podcast. The second place, you can just send me an email, curiousandcandidpodcast@gmail.com. Again, just feel free to reach out anytime. Would love to connect with you. And then before we leave this conversation with Sarah today, if you guys would do me a huge favor and please subscribe to Curious and Candid on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. I would greatly appreciate that. And again, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Curious and Candid, and we'll catch you next time.